Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
There's the bunt. That could be trouble as Petrie. No, Stevie dives in and beats it. Good effort by Steve Lyons.
That'll be a base hit right there. Good job. I'll tell you one thing, not a bad defensive play either by the Tigers.
Did you see that? Mm-hmm. He's going to get the dirt out, and all of a sudden he unbuckled his pants, and they fell down.
Mm-hmm. One of life's.
The face is about the same color as the bill of that cap right now.
Jeez, I don't think that's really the proper place to do that. But
he forgot where he was. Yeah. He had a vapor lock. Yeah. He had a brain cramp.
Classic stuff from MLB.com. It does my heart good to hear vintage Hawk and Wimpy there. The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working through the COVID-19 pandemic, including grocery store employees, restaurant staffs, and delivery drivers. We appreciate you. Steve Lyons, the former White Sox, joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Steve, thank you for being so flexible with your time. I know we've had a bunch of stuff going on with, obviously, the passing of Ed Farmer and other things that have occurred, but thanks for finally being with us.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, certainly Ed Farmer was an institution there with the White Sox and was around when I was playing there and certainly long after. And sad day for White Sox fans and baseball in general. Just a great guy. And obviously, I'm not doing anything these days, so it's easy for me to adjust.
Well, the reason why we wanted to have you on our list, and this is one of these ridiculous stories, and maybe it's just sort of the times in which we live. The wonderful author, Jeff Perlman, who writes a bunch of tremendous sports books, he was screwing around on Twitter, and he was creating these mock-ups of books that he said, this is my next book, it's coming out soon. And they were complete spoofs. But one of them got me all excited because it was a picture of George Foster in a White Sox uniform. And it said, like, my kind of town, George Foster and the story of the 1986 Chicago White Sox. And I thought, oh, my God, this is so cool. This was my team. I was at the park for so many of the games. And that's when Ivan Calderon, my favorite player, got there. And then he said, yeah, dude, no, it's a spoof. It's not real. So we decided to talk it into existence, to make it real and talk about this amazing year with all of these names. And in fact, you arrived June 29th of 1986. Tom Seaver was traded to the Boston Red Sox, bringing you, Steve Lyons, to the White Sox. So what were your, when you found out the trade was made and upon arrival, take us through that a little bit when you first got to this team.
You know, it was a confusing time for me. Obviously, I'd never been traded before. I looked at it as a better opportunity for my personal career. You know, when you're a young player, I think you usually do it the other way around. You try to fit in with the team, hope the team wins, and develop as time goes on. And then as you establish yourself, you know, then you can start thinking about being, you know, the best player you can possibly be. But I thought I was going to get a better opportunity to play with the White Sox. Obviously, I wasn't playing much with the Red Sox at the time, and so I thought it was a good opportunity for me to get more playing time. Unfortunately, and you probably know this better than I do, but it seems to me the timing was such that I believe it was Tony La Russa who really wanted me to play for him. And he got fired like a 2 days or a day before they actually made that trade. And so then Jim Fregosi took over as manager, and Fregosi basically didn't know who the hell I was. So things didn't get off to a great start. I ended up getting sent back down to AAA for a while, and things didn't really work out the way I was hoping them that they would.
Things were so crazy because right after you arrived, it was shortly thereafter that Bobby Bonilla was traded to the Pirates and Jose De Leon arrives. And then we had Ron Kittle on a couple of weeks ago talking about this. It was Kittle, Joel Skinner, and Wayne Tolleson then got shipped to the Yankees. Ron Hassey came back, and then Ron Hassey returned. And people don't believe me on this. That was the year that he never made an out. Ron Hassey had like a 150 OPS plus. He was an absolute monster at the plate that year, and then never replicated that again.
Hassey was a great guy. I mean, you're right. I mean, he had that one stretch where you couldn't get him out, and he was actually a pretty good hitter. But I never saw a catcher get hit by foul tips and balls in the dirt more than he did. I mean, the guy was an absolute magnet for balls that could hurt you when you're behind the plate. It seemed like every other pitch, the trainer was coming out to see if he was okay. You remember why this all happened, you know. Hawk Harrelson took over as GM. The very first trade that Hawk made was the Seaver deal for me. And, as I said, it didn't work out great for me. I ended up playing 5 years with the Red Sox, but that wasn't obviously I was hoping for more out of it. And I can tell you that Tom Seaver absolutely never talks about it. Obviously, he doesn't want to be known as a guy that got traded for me. And that was a straight up deal. Too bad for him.
Well, and the fact is that Tom Seaver wasn't the only all-time great MLB pitcher on the team, because on August 12th, Steve Carlton was signed. That had to just be bizarre at that point.
Yeah, it was really weird. I mean, I actually did a card signing with Steve Carlton, and he was legendary for never doing that kind of stuff. And I think what it was, and I realized who I was and what my purpose was most of the time. And certainly at a card signing like that, I was like the stopgap just to fill time while people were waiting in line to get Steve Carlton's autograph, because, you know, my line was very short. His was very long, so you could sneak over and get my autograph while you were still waiting in line for his. But it was interesting talking to him, because, you know, you bring up George Foster, and I believe this is correct. I'm getting old and my memory is bad, but they signed George Foster, I want to say, on like September 15th. And then I got sent down to the minor leagues because they signed George Foster. And then on September 30th, when you could bring up all the call-ups, then I came back up. And I could be wrong about this too, but I feel like they released Foster then. Did he make it through the end of the year?
Here's what I've got. Here's the timeline as I have it, according to Baseball Reference. It says on August 12th is when they signed Steve Carlton. 3 days later, August 15th, they signed George Foster as a free agent. And then on September 7th, they released George Foster.
Yes. Okay. So that... Wait a minute. They signed him when?
Mid-August. Okay. They signed him August 15th, released him September 7th. And why he was there, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knew either. That was the weird thing for me, too. Is like, I was the one, when they signed him on the 15th or whenever that was, I got sent down to AAA. And then 2 weeks later, I got called back up, because you can expand your rosters, obviously, at that point. And then, as I remembered, I thought they released him immediately. I guess they hung around for a few more days and then got released. But I mean, you're talking about George Foster, who was like an unbelievable player for so many years. They had a 3 year stretch there where he averaged 50 home runs. And that was, you know, during a time where, you know, nobody did. And I'm not sure what they were looking for in that situation. It was, team was kind of a mess at that point.
One thing I'm doing in this ongoing series is collecting Ivan Calderon stories, because that, for whatever reason, he was my favorite player when he arrived. He just had a knack for doing sort of odd things and being in weird places at weird times. Ron Kittle told the story of him attempting at one point, an angry Ivan Calderon attempted to throw his helmet at the pitcher, but it hooked on his thumb, and he ended up throwing his own helmet into his own face, which he hadn't seen before. But I'm wondering what your interaction was like. I know you weren't a teammate for that long a time, but he was just one of the more interesting players I can remember.
Yeah, you know, Calderon was Manny Ramirez before Manny. You know, he was kind of a fun-loving guy. He was always smiling and laughing, and he did. He did some odd things. He was a tremendously talented player, too, by the way. I mean, he could play. I remember one time I went in to, negotiate my next year's contract. I was not arbitration eligible with the White Sox, and I think I wanted $350,000 because I had played. I can't remember what year this was, but my argument was I actually played a lot. I didn't start a lot of games, but I was in many games. Reinsdorf kept saying, "Well, you're a utility guy. I can't pay you, you know, what I'd pay a guy like Ivan Calderon." And I said, "Well, I think I played in like 141 games last year." I said, "If I'm not a valuable member on your team, then you don't have one. You know, I mean, I'm in every game almost." And he said, he goes, "You're right. You are. You're worth it." And Reinsdorf had a great way of dealing with people. He kind of told you to take off. You're not going to get the raise you want, but you walk out the door feeling good about it somehow. And he basically told me, if I give you $350,000, then what do you think I'm going to have to pay Ivan Calderon? Because he's better than you are, and he's going to want more than that. And so, you know, it sort of made sense to me because he was absolutely correct. That's not really the story that I wanted to tell about Ivan. We flew into Seattle one night, and we were dead tired. It was 3 a.m, and we all kind of woke up and looked out the window. And next to our airplane was an Air Alaska flight pulling in. And I believe there's like a, you know, an Eskimo or some indigenous person, you know, to Alaska on the tail of their airline. It's a guy that's all wrapped up in a snow mask almost. And someone looked out the window and said, "Hey, look, it's Air Ivan," because the guy on the back of the airplane, the tail of the airplane, looked exactly like Ivan Calderon, and the entire flight was dying. One of the funniest things we ever heard.
He'd be the only one fishing shirtless in sub-zero temperatures with gold chains hanging out there.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah, he was a really good player.
There's a story that Kenny Williams told me years ago about, and your name came up as we were, this was in the dugout, and I was telling Kenny about how I used to come to games in the mid 80s, that, you know, my friend and I would drive down and there was never anybody there, and how good the food was. And there was that, the taco place was always really good. And the other thing that I liked, other than the fact that they would accept my horrible fake ID, and I could drink, you know, the Little King's cream ale up there with this absolutely crappy Dempster ID, that do you remember they had these snow cones, and it was basically ice cubes in a parfait glass, and then three different colors of sweetened syrup, like food coloring. And I'd always get one of those, and I mentioned it to Kenny Williams, and he told a story. He goes, "Oh, yeah, because you know what happened to Steve Lyons once?" I said, "What?" He said, "Well, Lyons had somebody go get him one of these big, like, snow cones, because he didn't think he was going in the game. And instead of using the straw, he said, Steve is drinking this thing, and he didn't realize that his entire face was being stained, like red and green around his mouth and his cheeks and everything. And then all of a sudden, Fregosi tells him he's got to go in the game. And he goes out there, and everyone's like, what's wrong with his face? Like, they didn't realize. He said, and Kenny was just cracking up telling the story. I don't know if you remember it, but he said that there was God's honest truth that happened.
Well, the funny thing is about those things is if you mixed enough colors in there, basically just turned brown, and you were just, you know, eating the slush. And, you know, I used to love snow cones, but the bottom line is, you know, all the good stuff runs to the bottom of the snow cone. Then you just have ice on the top. I just chop all that off and get rid of it and kind of drink the syrup like you did. And you know, it can get messy.
Yeah. You know, there's the idea of you now thinking you're going in a game too when you pretty much got in every game. Now that clip that we played, and it's funny, you are still remembered to this day when we mentioned you were coming. Oh, and then the jokes are still out there. The texters say, "Yeah, I wonder if he's going to keep his pants on." It's incredible the reasons why we stick in memory. And you know, when all is said and done, that's still going to be the video that they're going to play of you of trying to get the dirt out of your pants.
Yeah, you know, I'm absolutely fine with it. You know, there are people out there that think I did it on purpose, which is asinine. You know, if I did, I'd be a marketing genius because clearly I've made an entire career out of that one play. I know I wish that I was remembered for a Game 7 home run in the World Series or something more significant about that. I mean, I like to feel like, you know, someone might remember me for playing all nine positions in one game. That was certainly a kind of a feather in my cap. But yeah, that play goes down in history or my infamy, I'm sure. But somebody, not these days, considering I don't get outside much right now, but until the COVID-19 thing going on right now, I would get asked about that literally every day of my life. And it didn't bother me. Certainly, it's something that, you know, people remember. I do think it's funny when people say, "Oh, is he going to keep his pants on?" Or, you know, "What were you thinking?" You know, as if after 30, how old was that? It was 1990. You know, it was a long time ago that I haven't heard every possible line that someone can say to me about that. And I think that's the strange part. And now working with the Red Sox, and I've been here for the last 7 years, the number of fans that will stop me and tell me that they were at that game. And I just, you know, go along with them and say, "Hey, yeah, that was great, wasn't it?" But to me, thinking that if we're in Boston and it's a, you know, and you know, whatever, a 22-year-old Red Sox fan, you know, and knowing that I was with the White Sox when I did it and it happened in Detroit, I'm pretty sure that guy wasn't at the game. So, you know, sometimes our memories play tricks on us.
Steve, before we let you go, I just want to know what you think of baseball and how it's planning some kind of return whenever it can. We had that sort of weird night with the report overnight and into this morning as we started the show that they were going to get everything going and get everybody out into Phoenix and sequester everybody in hotels and have all these protocols in place to try to start in May or in early June. And then shortly thereafter, a couple hours ago, baseball sends out a note to say, "No, we're not quite at that point yet." How are you balancing your desire for baseball to return with an understanding that you can't really timeline a pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, New York is in a crisis. From what I understand there, they're starting to see fewer deaths. That's a great sign. I live in Southern California. You know, we're sheltered at home here, and they're thinking the worst for us is about 7 days away. But even though, you know, you hit a peak, you still come down the other side of that peak, and there's still, you know, tons and tons of cases and deaths happening on the other side of that peak as well. So, yeah, there's a lot to figure out before they actually can put a plan together. But at least I love the fact that they're thinking about doing something. I mean, this country is going to need something, especially in another month or so when we're just sick of it. And when people start to get mad and start relaxing their guard because they just can't stand it anymore. I love the fact that they're thinking about options. I think there will be a ton of opposition to doing something like that because just the logistics of keeping everybody safe, I think that would be – I think you might see another step towards announcers of baseball games, watching them on TV and announcing in some small booth because they're trying to stay safe, not even at the ballpark. I would hate that, but we've seen steps towards that in our recent past as well. So, you know, if they have to play games with no fans and it's on TV and it gives us a chance to watch somehow, I'm all for it. But you know that they're going to have to figure out a seemingly safe way to do it or it won't happen.
And Steve, last thing for you, what are you hearing about what still could be coming from Rob Manfred's investigation of the Red Sox for any involvement in the sign-stealing scandal?
He's typing a lot, isn't he? I mean, what? He was like 2 weeks ago, he announced that they had come to a decision. You know, if you announce that you come to a decision, but you don't announce the actual decision, and you said you haven't had a chance to type it up yet, that means they, I don't know. You know, I hate to speculate, but, you know, I do work for the Red Sox now. And, you know, the Red Sox, from all indications that I was understanding from them, were pretty confident that they didn't do anything wrong. And so they were thinking that there wouldn't be a finding. If there is something, it would be hard to believe that there's not something at this point, because it would have just been, oh, we didn't find anything, let's all go away. You know, unfortunately, I think that if it's something very minor and they found something that they didn't like and they give the Red Sox a slap on the wrist, I feel like the Red Sox kind of get lumped into the whole Astro thing. And no matter what it is, if it's some type of finding that's you know, just a little off or not good, or we didn't like this and we're going to do this to you guys because of it, I think it would be just a horrible thing for the Red Sox, obviously. And so I'm still hoping for the best, you know, just reputation wise and perception wise, because I'm associated with the organization. And so I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Steve, this is a lot of fun. Again, appreciate you being flexible with your schedule, and I'm glad you could take the time. Best of health to you and yours.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
That is Steve Lyons, the former White Sox and current broadcaster with the Red Sox. And that brings us to America's favorite game show. It's called Who Am I? We decided to play this game because we can and because it's fun. And we are going to bring you today's memory athlete from the world of baseball. So listen closely. Here are some of the criteria for which you are going to make your educated guess. Who am I? I am a current, active MLB player. Among active players, I am 9th all-time in hits with 1,807. I am 10th all-time in offensive replacement with 42.7. I'm 3rd in home runs. I am 5th in walks among active players. I am a 3-time All-Star. I'm on my 6th team. My career slash line is .263, .352 on base, .499 slugging. The following 10 players are my statistical comps, my similarity scores according to Baseball Reference. From 10 to 1, these are the most similar players for an entire career. The aforementioned George Foster, Frank Howard, Nelson Cruz, Adam Dunn, Andrew Jones, Jack Clark, Rocky Colavito, Gil Hodges, Jose Canseco, and the number one most similar player to me is Mark Teixeira. Again, I'm a 3-time All-Star. I am a currently active NBA player. I ask you, who am I? We'll reveal the answer when we come back on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com?
We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Dan Bernstein asks, who am I?
Paris Pine, I don't know. Brown.
Oh, he's tall.
Yeah, he's kind of tall, sort of tall. And he's like always wearing
t-shirts.
Yeah.
Who am I?
So he's sort of tall.
Kind of.
With hair.
Yeah.
And he wears t-shirts sometimes.
Yes.
On 670 The Score.
Nicely done, the Jay Zawoski, even down to the music. I get it. I see you working there, big fella. So I asked you before the break, who am I? We are going to do this every day. I like coming up with these. I have had people suggesting some, too, and sending in some really interesting names. And it could be from any sport. We've been doing the major sports far, but I don't know. Maybe there'll be some others out there because we can do whatever we want and nobody can do anything about it. And did I say, I think I said NBA player instead of MLB player or All-Star. I'll give you these criteria again. When I ask, who am I? A current active MLB player, a three-time All-Star on my sixth team. Your slash line, 263, 352, 499. And when I say slash line, that is always batting average, on base percentage, and slugging percentage. Among active players, I'm ninth in hits, 10th in offensive wins above replacement, 3rd in home runs, 5th in walks. And my comps are George Foster, Frank Howard, Nelson Cruz, Adam Dunn, Andrew Jones, Jack Clark, Rocky Colavito, Gil Hodges, Jose Canseco, and Mark Teixeira. Texters, you have done remarkably well. I don't know if you are able to outguess either one of our producers or if you guys have peaked at the text lines at this point, but this was well done. I'm quite pleased. Jay, do you have a guess?
I had two guesses and I know they're both wrong. My first one was Nelson Cruz, and then you said that was a comp, so it's obviously not Nelson mm-hmm. Cruz. And my other one was Andrew McCutchen, but you said six teams. So
correct.
That's not Andrew McCutchen. So I do not.
And considerably more power. He's got. I have 414 home runs. Ray, did you have anybody in your mind's eye?
I don't, but Sean has one here.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking Edwin Encarnacion, especially with the home run numbers.
Yeah, you were thinking absolutely correctly. Nicely done, Mr. Anderson.
Look at the big brain on answer, Sean.
Yeah, the answer is White Sox designated hitter Edwin Encarnacion. He can take the parrot for a run around the bases as he does. The man with the imaginary parrot on his arm is the answer to today's edition of Who Am I? And this segment is brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Since 1930, Grand Appliance has been serving Chicagoland with expert sales advice, professional delivery, and the lowest prices every day. And that's still true today. They're open with expanded live chat and phone support and are here for you. Shop Grand Appliance today. And the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including grocery store employees, restaurant staffs, and delivery drivers. We appreciate you. This has just been posted by Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, because there's been all sorts of weird and conflicting stuff coming out of MLB, with now a second major national reporter getting the details of this plan that's been floated. But there's another angle here that Rosenthal is adding, even though MLB itself in their statement had backed off of this. So we've got that short statement in just a second in case you missed it. This is Rosenthal in The Athletic. Federal officials imagine a start to the 2020 baseball season in Arizona that might be difficult, if not impossible, for the sport to implement. Under a plan supported by some leading members of three federal agencies, major leaguers would not sit bunched up together in a dugout, but 6 feet away from each other in the stands, practicing social distancing. They would exist in a sealed environment, moving only between ballparks and hotels. And perhaps most intriguing, from the government's perspective, they would serve as a model for how the nation could reignite the economy. Uh-huh. The plan, as part of its messaging, even would include players forsaking celebratory high fives to avoid physical contact and possible transmission of the coronavirus. Games without fans ideally would take place starting in May or June at 10 spring training parks in Chase Field in Phoenix. But before baseball effectively could proceed under a quarantine, it would need to overcome myriad hurdles, including possible concerns raised by both its players and owners, according to sources. Now, here is the MLB statement. And this is, even as this is being read, this is a different angle here, because this is coming from highly placed officials at three federal agencies and maybe not from baseball itself. So MLB released this earlier this morning. MLB has been acting bring numerous contingency plans that would allow play to commence once public health situation has improved to the point that it is safe to do so. While we have discussed the idea of staging games at one location as one potential option, we have not settled on that option or developed a detailed plan. While we continue to interact regularly with governmental and public health officials, we have not sought or received approval of any plan from federal, state, and local officials or the Players Association. The health and safety of our employees, players, fans, and public at large are paramount, and we are not ready at this time to endorse any particular format for staging games in light of the rapidly changing public health situation caused by the coronavirus. So what I'm wondering is this outside pressure then being placed on baseball to try to do something, to try to be this example, to try... Man, this, it gets complicated now and a little bit uncomfortable if we've got a wag the dog kind of situation right here where baseball is being pushed out there to try to help to do something, to set an example. It's wrong. It's gross. It's just, these are actual people we're talking about. Even though we might have robot umpires, these aren't robot players. These are people that would have to staff the hotels, people that would have to drive the bus, people that would have to open the doors of these stadiums and do all the housekeeping in the hotels for everybody, not to mention what you're planning on doing with any media. This is it is forced to me, and I hope that whoever these people are in government who are talking to Ken Rosenthal are doing, and I wish I could trust that this was being done with the best advice of epidemiologists, of doctors, of anybody involved in public health, because as much as you want to send some sort of message, the truth is out there, and the truth is that we haven't peaked. The truth is that we're discussing temporary mass graves. The truth is that we're discussing makeshift morgues, because the actual morgues are being overrun with dead bodies. The truth is we're talking about orders being placed emergency for more and more body bags in some of these areas. And this is no joke. And doing whatever you want with baseball and optics, these people are concerned for their own families and their own friends and relatives. They're to let alone be away from their families, sometimes very young families, growing families for 4.5 months is really asking an awful lot. So it's my hope that MLB resists any outside pressure to try to be unnecessarily a canary in the coal mine here for trying to push things back to a forced normalcy that doesn't actually exist. And this reminder too, we're going to bring in David Haugh in just a bit as part of our ongoing series of connecting the score shows throughout the day by having a presence at the end of this one from someone else in another day part. It's beautiful out there right now, and it's going to be until some rains are expected in later. But just because it's nice out doesn't mean that our circumstances have changed. It doesn't mean that any rules have changed. So even though you want to grill out with friends, and even though you want to invite people over, and you see somebody across the alley and you want to say, hey, come on over, let's have a beer, I know how it is. I know what the instincts are, because we're all human beings, and this is what we do when the weather gets great. But I urge you, please, please, please keep doing what you're doing, because it is starting to work. We are starting to see the early benefits of curve flattening, of social distancing, and listening to some of the smartest people and most informed and educated people talk about it. We're still in the middle of the beginning here. And before we get to the actual middle and close to the end, we can't let our instincts when the warm weather hits change our behavior patterns. So you're doing great. Keep those masks on. Keep doing the wave instead of the handshake, and spray down surfaces. Wash your hands. And we'll say good morning to David Haw in just a bit. Talk to him, see how he's doing, and talk about a very, very wild morning in baseball news. Maybe some Bulls stuff as well. All of that coming your way. I'm Dan Bernstein, here till noon on The Score.
This is Haw.
Yes, it is. Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670. The Score, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, live and local. So for this portion of these shows, we're not doing in the true sense that we usually do, but we want to keep that up. We want to keep that cross-pollination going. So yesterday we talked to Danny Parkins, and today it's David Haw of the Mullion Haw Show mornings, 5 to 9, joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Weird day of baseball news, hasn't it been?
Morning, Dan. It has been. If it's still morning, I think it is a few more minutes. It was a strange morning on our show. You know, you get up probably around 4, and the story from Jeff Passan, and I know AP did a similar thing, and now Ken Rosenthal is up, but that broke last night around 11:30. And so when you get up and you're preparing for your show, and we have, as you know, you prepare kind of the night before, given the realities of the morning, I didn't anticipate something like this to have to kind of talk about. And so what you're doing is you're sort of reacting to it, you're sort of processing through it. And it is, you know, it has so many different implications that you're trying to get some reaction as well from the listeners. And so it was a very strange story. I respect where you're coming from. I know that it's a definitely, you know, that is the priority. And that is the sort of the grim reality that you've talked about the last several hours. I suppose that, you know, what's happened here is these contingency plans are being sort of vetted publicly. It's almost like we were privy to one of these conversations between all of these different people. Like we were led into this MLBPA, this Zoom meeting, and we were allowed to kind of look into what they were considering. And boy, they're considering all different sorts of possibilities, and this is a wild one.
And I guess the way I balance it is, I'm not mad at them for planning. You know, they should be. They should be trying to figure out what's reasonable. But then they got to get out of that room and say, when is it okay for us to be doing this? And what example does it set? And what else can we be doing to make sure, at least in the first phase of this, before this peaks, that we're still doing everything we can do and not taking resources from the real battles that are occurring elsewhere where so many people are dying so fast? You know, it's just, you never really know. The Zoom meetings feel so insulated sometimes that maybe this is what they have to do to let it breathe and get some sense as to how it plays out there.
It's a potentially dangerous trial balloon, I think. You're right. The words or the sentences that I think I wanted to, you know, try to fixate on or try to focus on is the fact that there's a sentence in one of the stories that says, federal officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as the National Institutes of Health, have been supportive of a plan that would adhere to strict isolation, promote social distancing, and allow MLB to become the first pro sport to return. Now, look, there are a lot of hurdles to clear before we're at that point. But the fact, at least, again, this is maybe the minimum bar here, but at least if the CDC and the National Institutes for Health are involved in this conversation, you have a different level of trust rather than it's just a manager or a player or a politician or somebody who has more to gain and less maybe serious concerns, that these are people following the science. And if the science is telling them that maybe by June this will be on the other side of this and this is possible, then I think people are so, I don't want to say desperate for hope, but maybe it is desperation. Maybe desperate for hope, Dan, that they're looking at this as a possible window to see that glimmer and say, okay, I can see what they see, and I'm so glad to see it because it's been so long since I felt this.
I also think that everybody recognizes the symbolic value of baseball, that we're not talking about just some form of entertainment or some sport. It is the most American of sports, the most representative of summer and of our history. And I think that people are grabbing on to that. And maybe it's government officials also grabbing on to the optic value of it being baseball. And even though I understand it, I just think there's even more of a responsibility in that regard, that sort of like the Hippocratic Oath, that it does no harm. That either right. They make sure they don't send the wrong message or make sure that they're not endangering these players by either having them sharing the same baseball, picking it up and throwing it to each other all around the horn, or having them in, you know, densely packed into some of these hotels. So it's obviously a balancing act. And as long as they're actually talking to objective doctors who aren't motivated by optics and politics, I'm open to it. It just sounded sort of rash and rushed the way it was presented today.
And as long as they're not, or as long as they're aware of the optics and they have maybe addressed this, but if, and in the reality, you know, the people who are existing within this baseball biosphere, whether it's trainers, managers, players, whoever it is, executives, they cannot be privy or have access to these kind of things, the testing or whatever it is that they have access to that the general public does not. I mean, you cannot put these people first just because of a certain status they've attained or because they're professional athletes. I think everybody understands that, or you hope that everybody does. And you hope that this is done with the expectation that everybody will have the same access to everything that these players will. They're just going to put a, you know, put them under a proverbial bubble for 30, 60, 90 days. I think it's a big ask. And I do wonder about the psychology, and I do wonder about the players. I do wonder about the personal sacrifices they would have to make, even though you would be professionally compensated and professionally, you know, doing what you do. Personally, the challenge would be great for somebody walking away from a newborn, from a sick relative, from whatever situation you'd be walking away from. So there are a lot of things here that you know, you have to consider when, and maybe that's the beginning of a conversation. It's a long one though.
Yeah, and on another subject too, what a difference 24 hours makes, because you know, a day ago I was all excited about the possibility of the Bulls having a shot at Bobby Webster to come in and run their organization, because he's, to me, the closest thing to a Theo Epstein-type intellect out there who is just going to, we know when he takes over a team, he has a very high chance of being extremely successful at it. And then, of course, it's like, yeah, well, he's not going anywhere. And apparently Adam Simon of the Heat isn't going anywhere. And now we're down to a couple guys who might end up being fine, but it doesn't get you going in quite the same way. And I don't know about you, about whether or not you get hung up with titles, but I'm not hearing the term president. I'm hearing the term executive vice president, and then they would just change John Paxson's title. So I guess I'm getting more lukewarm with every passing moment of this Bulls thing.
I understand that, because I think that it's a natural reflex to be cynical or skeptical when it comes to the Bulls in the front office. I do like the guys that they talked to in the last couple of days. I do like the Justin Zanuck and also the Arturas Karnisovas possibilities, only because of this. They both represent or come from or would come from organizations that have the continuity, the kind of quiet consistency that I think the Bulls have lacked. And so when you see, and they maybe have done more with less. I mean, you talk in the case of Karnisovas, who's supposed to have his Zoom interview today, AK, as they call him in Denver. We found out from one of the Denver Post beat writers this morning, when AK gets his time, you know, he's going to be a guy who was on the other end of a deal that fleeced the Bulls with the Doug McDermott deal. He's a guy who he's drafted very well. So, Dan, I get it because Bobby Webster was one of these NBA prodigies, but I don't want to dismiss the possibility that they could still get a guy that's a proven difference maker, has experience on the job. And I do think that Michael Reinsdorf, who has put this search together and done all the research here, it's a pretty good list. They're pretty good, high caliber candidates. And that to me represents a little bit of progress because you wanted this all along. Everybody wanted some change with the Bulls front office. And this looks like it's a step in the right direction.
It is, if John Paxson isn't given the kind of oxygen to sort of continue to be a strong presence. And I like John a great deal personally. I've always gotten along very well with him, and I do think he's a smart guy. As I understand it, he's been in full cooperation. But I also know that when you're there, you're there. And the muscle memory of having done a job is such that the similarities, the parallels to Bob Pulford with the Hawks, David, are just that they knew that eventually Bob Pulford had to be outside the building. He just couldn't be there anymore. And they transferred him over. The difference with the Wirtz business, as opposed to the Reinsdorf business, is the Wirtzes had another side of the business where they could say, sure, we're going to employ you and you can go over to the liquor distribution side or help out over here, over there. There really is no other side. What is there, Silver Chalice, or there's some other investments, there's some real estate stuff, but you know, Paxson's a basketball guy. I do see pitfalls in having an arrangement that would allow for him to make things less clear organizationally than they would otherwise be.
Valid concern. I think Pax recognizes this, though, much like the Hawks example you cite, and much like the Cubs before Theo arrived. The Bulls, I think, recognize internally the need to modernize their front office and the need to supplement their front office to make it bigger, to make it better, to make it more sophisticated and broad. And that means internationally. That means you know, with your scouting, and that means multiple hires, not just one guy. One guy's not going to do it. You may be excited about the GM from the Nuggets or the Jazz, as we talked about, or the guys. Maybe it's Matt Lloyd from the Magic, or maybe it's Trent Redden from the Clippers. The other guys on this list, but whoever it is, it's not going to be the last guy they hire, and it's got to be more than one person who takes on this challenge. And I think in that capacity, they do recognize the need to kind of catch up with the rest of the league, because this is a franchise that has drafted pretty well, but that's where it stopped, and they can't let that happen anymore.
And ever since Jerry Krause was here, who was famously closed and famously secretive, and had, you know, the literal curtain there in the Birdo Center that would slide down so we couldn't see any of the magic of what they were doing, I do think the era and the atmosphere around basketball has changed. That we know, as Rasheed Wallace says, we know ball don't lie. We know what goes on out there, and we know that the worldwide game has put a spotlight on all kinds of players. There's no secret players stashed in places like there used to be, because everybody's so well publicized. I would like to see, as part of this, a commitment to a little more transparency, and much like in the way when Theo says, I'm not going to hide the ball from you, here's what we're going to do, here's how we're going to do it, where Rick Hahn has said, this is the stage of where we are right now, this is what we're doing, whoever it is, to kind of have a maybe a little more openness, a little more connection with the fan, rather than trying to do your press conference on the very last day and sort of spring it on you. Or, you know, maybe, obviously the talking to David Schuster on Christmas was kind of a tradition, but it wasn't a time where there were a lot of people paying a whole lot of attention. To take this opportunity, whoever it is, from the top of the organization, to maybe open things up a little bit and let some sunlight in at every level.
You know, Dan, I think that's fair. And I think that even it started out to the point where, you know, Pax kind of nudged Gar back aside and he was going to be the front guy for a while. And that went on for a little bit and then it started to get better. But now I think it's almost there's such a toxic kind of environment in terms of any time the Bulls front office and the media kind of collide. And it is a collision. And there's so much skepticism and there's so much history that I think that whoever is next, there might be a breath of fresh air, and they might, I don't want to say invite that, but not be as resistant to the idea of having to be more transparent and kind of rebuild that relationship between not only the folks in the media, but maybe the fans, because the fans, that they're as fed up as anybody. So that is something that I think is a priority. It's not as big a priority as kind of fixing the free agent puzzle and figuring out how to get, you know, elite free agents to come to Chicago, but it is part of the new equation.
So I've had fun watching on Twitter, seeing at least in Northwest Indiana, Dan McNeil has been going out and socially distant bass fishing as best that he could. I know you're a yoga guy. Is anything else that that you're doing now for mental health?
Let me tell you. So our house is a yoga studio in the basement. My wife is still offering online classes for her studio, radio studio in my little cubbyhole, which I am ensconced in now. We have Sports Talk Live is digitally some days, 3 days a week. So I get in my living room, I'm doing a TV studio. And then my son is 19 and complaining about everything along the way. So we're just sort of trying to get by like everybody else. Oh, did I mention my two dogs? My golden retriever stopped running with me the other day because I was taking him too far. So he just stood in a parking lot and stared at me and said, I'm done.
Best of luck with all of it, and thanks for joining
us. Dan.
I'll look forward to listening to you and Mully tomorrow morning.
Have a great day.
That. You too. Best of health. That is David Haw, one of our guests today, who also was joined, Bruce Levine, Eric Walden, and Steve Lyons. He was a lot of fun. We appreciate everybody who joined us. Jay Zawoski and Ray Diaz, our producers. Thanks to Shane Reardon, Sean Anderson, everybody else continuing to work in the studio. Thanks to Mitch Rosen for all of his support and doing what he does as well. Stay safe. I know the weather is terrific, but keep doing what you're doing because by all accounts, it's working. So be smart, be safe, be socially distant, listen to doctors, and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Through this. Lawrence Holmes is next. We will talk again tomorrow morning at 9.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.